Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Is It a Real Classic, a podcast about movies and TV shows where a bunch of well-versed folks come together and answer that age-old movie debate about what makes a classic. I am your host, Lit Nick, and with me today is Mr. Cobra Kai KP. Say hello, Cobra Kai KP.
Strike first.
Strike first. Very good. Yes.
Strike first.
Strike first. You know, you gotta start saying it before I finish saying it, so that way you truly do strike first.
You know, it's the thought of the day. Strike first is the thought of the day.
It's thought of the day. Always strike first in life. Okay, so it's just going to be the two of us. And the reason why is because we're going to be talking about One Night in Miami, a movie that just came out on Amazon Prime as a knee-jerk reaction. Instant reaction. Almost instant. We watched it like... He just watched it like... Last night.
Last week when it came out, yeah.
Yeah. I actually saw it at the SCAD Film Festival, like, in, good lord, it feels ages ago, in, like, October and September-ish. So I got to see this really, really early, and I was very fortunate to do so, and as soon as I saw it, I immediately started, like, texting people, like, when this movie comes out, you have to see it. It is so good. It is next level, and to this day, I think it is my favorite movie of 2020. I believe. Granted, not a lot of movies came out in 2020 for a number of reasons, but...
Okay, was it considered a 2020 movie?
It is. It is considered a 2020 movie.
All right, so when I read, I think USA Today said movie of the year, they weren't talking about 2 weeks.
Yeah, they were talking about 2020. They weren't just saying, like, it's been 2 weeks, and let me tell you. Best
theater in the clubhouse. January 14th, the leader in the clubhouse. I got it. Okay. All right.
You know, I guess it's like a first come, first serve kind of thing. Or like, I guess if you did just come into the party, I guess technically you would be the best movie of the year. But anyway, for those of you who do not know, the story is about a fictitious account of four icons. Muhammad Ali, or as he's called in the movie, Cassius Clay, Malcolm X, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke meeting one night to discuss their roles in the civil rights movement and their future, if they hope to have any. That is the most bare-bones description I can give it, because technically that's right. I mean, the whole movie basically takes place in a hotel room, and it is one night in Miami, as it says on the tin.
Right.
Kev, what did you think of it overall?
The movie overall?
Yeah, Ron Stark.
Well, first of all... Then Regina King, right? Now, does she write this and produce it?
She was the director. Original script was a stage play, hence why it's all really in one room. You can kind of tell the play influences. But
totally works stage play.
Oh, yeah, definitely does. But this is indeed directed by Regina King, who some of our podcast listeners may remember as Sister Knight from Watchmen, among many other things. Oscar winner already, Regina King. Maybe coming for that second one. We shall see.
I love this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I love everything about this movie.
It is fantastic. Let's break down, first of all, by talking about the performances, because, my God... I mean, when you have four people like Malcolm, Cassius, or Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke, those are really big shoes to fill, because these are icons.
Think about this. The characters in play here. Ali has multiple movies already made about him, including one he starred in.
Yeah.
Malcolm X obviously has the Spike Lee movie, you know, with Denzel, and then you have Jim Brown. Spike did a fantastic documentary on Jim Brown, and one of the better ones you'll ever see if you ever get a chance to pull that up and watch it. And then if Sam Cooke is he should have a movie, and he really, really Leslie Odom Jr. should play him.
There is a documentary on Netflix that was about the assassination of Sam Cooke, and it is very good.
I was watching a documentary on Amazon, which is just the life story, and it's last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bobby Womack is one of the guys being interviewed, his brother, a gentleman that was in the first band there, the Stirring Singers, I believe. The gospel, the second band he was in, but the gospel band that gave him the platform that eventually he goes to become a pop star, he bounces off of, right? Mm-hmm. That guy's, there is, Aretha Franklin is in it. So it's really good as well. It's not as interesting as the one you're talking about. That thing is, that's very interesting, Doc.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You were saying, actually, like, these are very four people who've had a lot of movies based off of them.
They literally, you could take any, you could have a movie, you could do a movie on just Malcolm X pre Finding Religion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That could be a whole story in itself. This time period here could be a story in itself. The of course, whatever happens between this night ending, him breaking with the church, finishing his autobiography and being murdered, all that could be a doc unto itself. You know what I mean? They're all lived lives like that. Like, you know, Jim Brown is one of the more fascinating characters in history. And, you know, I mean, you could have a movie just about him sitting down with the gangs of LA and trying to get them to come together.
Yeah.
Which happened for 20 years after this movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was also gonna say that, like, the performances, as like we were talking about, like, those are Kingsley Ben-Adir is trying to follow up Denzel as, like, one of the most definitive performances as Malcolm X, and he does a spectacular job. How do you play Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay? How do you play, you're following up Will Smith, and, like, already Muhammad Ali has such an air about him that it's impossible to put into words, like, his natural, like, exuding charisma. But this guy, mm-hmm. Eli Gorey, is able to not only bring out that cockiness and, like, the things we know Muhammad Ali for, but also he brings out a very timidness that's, like, hidden behind all the swagger, I noticed.
Well, the beauty here in what he does with his character is, this is Cassius. We know of Ali so much, right? What we don't see a lot of is the kid. You see a couple of highlights where he'll be yelling in the ring or something. He was still a kid when these conversations were being had around him. Once he decides he's Ali or Cassius X or whatever he said that night that morphs into Ali, that is when the weight of something bigger than him starts to get on his shoulders, and he, it's not quite the same anymore. The innocence is gone, right? And what's the beautiful thing is, Eli Gore, he brings out that kid, and you can feel how he's new to these conversations, and this is strange to him. And of course, he's in the middle of the biggest night of his life,
mm-hmm.
you know, when all this is going on around him.
I mean, yeah, he did, like, it starts off with the famous, like, boxing match, and, like, Muhammad Ali is victorious, and he literally is coming back, and, like, the world is basically throwing up fireworks because of the fact that he won. I think that's a joke he makes a little later. But mm-hmm. all this, and he's, and you forget how young he is until you see that come out in the movie.
Correct.
And also, we have Aldis Hodge, who you may know, I know from Leverage, as well as you may know as playing a certain MC in Straight Outta Compton.
MC Ren, right?
Yeah, MC Ren. And
he's in a show on Showtime with Kevin Bacon right now that's really good, where he plays like a district attorney and Kevin Bacon's a crooked cop.
Mm-hmm.
In case you're looking for your six moves to Bacon.
There we go. We found it, boys. We also have, he was also in The Invisible Man, which is another great movie from 2020.
Right.
Aldis Hodge is just great, guys. He's great. Anything he does, he just knocks out of the park.
Is he in Candyman?
I don't think he's in Candyman.
Okay, my bad. I apologize.
No, it's okay. He was in The Invisible Man, though. I mean, it's another Blumhouse production. So, and we were going to get Candyman in 2020, but I think people, I'm sad. But anyways, getting back to the point at hand. Like I said, Aldis Hodge is just a really great actor. He knocks out Park every time he has a chance, and you give him like the length to do it, and he pulls off Jim Brown as like almost the adult in the group. Like, I got that feeling every time. Like, and it's amazing when he's the adult in the group when you have Malcolm, who's basically there as well, who's the other adult in the group, it feels like, at times. But this is a very cool, well, collected, but very world-weary Jim Brown.
Yes. Jim Brown is playing a role, and he feels that he's playing the role of Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so, right? You can feel it. I think he even says it somewhere in the movie. And Sam's an adult as well, but he is playing a role that allows people to like him. You know what I mean? And that is a role he's a persona as well as a businessman, right? Yeah. Because he can't be effective in the businessman role as a black man without the persona, right? They have to not be worried about him in order for him to get the work done, which is what winds up being really the crux of the argument between him and Malcolm, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, and then we have, as you said, Sam Cooke, played by Leslie Odom Jr. You may know him as Aaron Burr from Hamilton, among other things. But I also really dug his story while we were talking about it, because it really, I mean, the whole movie centered around these doubts that these people have about where things are going. Like, even Malcolm, who's been pushing for the status quo, shares a bit of his doubts that if he can't get everyone on board with his vision, what's he going to do? And even then, not everyone is in that same vision of what he wants. And for Sam Cooke, like, there's a very interesting thing where it's like, you are this very famous and rich musician who has he's on the top of the charts, and you're doing Twisting the Night Away. Like, I love Twisting the Night Away, but still things like, you're going to sing that when we have Bob Dylan, as Malcolm says, doing music that you should be doing? Questioning the status quo?
Can we talk about... We're not worried about spoilers, right? We assume people have watched this.
Before we continue on, I will say, this is the non-spoiler part of the review. Now we're entering the spoiler part of the review, so if you haven't seen it, hop on Amazon Prime and watch it. So here's your warning. There you go. You had it. If you're coming to watch a review on a movie and were angered by spoilers, that's on you. Okay, so here we go, entering that. Go ahead.
And I piggyback on what you're talking about with the uncertainty. If at the beginning of the movie we have, you know, Malcolm has realized things about Elijah Muhammad that he cannot be on board with. And he knows if he were to bring all of this to light, it blows up everything he believes is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So he has his whole foundation of everything he believes in has been shaken. Sam Cooke just bombed at the Copa.
Oh yeah.
Now,
last scene.
There's actually a fantastic pull up on your Spotify. Sam Cooke at the Copa, where he goes back and kills it. You pull it up, listen to it anytime you want. It's fantastic. But he bombs, and remember, he's trying to cross over into white audiences. And he completely fails at it, to the point where he knows he failed. And actually, in that one documentary I watched last night, he does an interview where he talks about how he had failed. And he just said, I just wasn't prepared for what I had to be able to do there. It was my fault I failed. And Clay had just been knocked down in a fight at Wembley Stadium. He got to talking while he was fighting. He got caught with a right, and the bell kind of saved him. Or the Liston fight doesn't even happen, which is why, you know, by Jim Brown, or one of them, says he never thought he was going to win. Now, he was talking all that talk. He told Malcolm before, you know, all that talk he talks, he had heard Gorgeous George and how Gorgeous George was able to stir people up and how they would pay to watch him fight and lose. That was the blueprint of how Gorgeous George being a pro wrestler at the time, mm-hmm. a blueprint of how he was able to bring people to arenas. And then you had, you know, Jim Brown, who... The more personal story, of course, and it's a true story. It's out of his autobiography, where he goes to Mr. Bridges' house, Mr. Carlton. He goes to his house, and he is allowed to sit on the porch, and he tells him how proud he is of him, and that he wants to put on the sign "Home of Jim Brown" out in front of the. By the same token, he's going to move a dresser. Jim Brown wants to help him, won't let him in the house.
Because, and the reason why he says, like, we don't allow any just plain hard R N-word. We don't let them in the house. Which is...
Correct!
What I saw, that's one of the scenes that's ingrained in my mind. Like, oh, I love Beau Bridges. And then, like, you see the thing, it's like, oh, this is nice. Look at this. And then the one, like, on a dime, it's like, oh, this... Ow.
So right, because shocking. For a second, even Jim kind of forgets their history. Mm-hmm. His mom worked with the guy. You know what I mean? They're not friends. But the celebrity allows him to be treated like a friend in certain situations. And in that area of the South, of course, Georgia like that, at that point in time, things were, you know, very different. But anyway, so there's where you get the uncertainty from. And she does a great job of playing that out prior to, and even, you know, Angelo Dundee not wanting Cassius to go pray for the fight with Malcolm, mm-hmm. You know, and Dundee fearing, and the guy who plays Dundee does a great job too.
His name eludes me, but I'll probably remember in a second.
Michael Robinson.
Yes.
Plays that part. And he does a fantastic job in that role. Dundee's a very famous, all these people that you're seeing, like when somebody walks out there and they're playing the role of
just really big named people in history.
Johnny Carson, Ed McMahon. You know, when you're playing those roles, even if it's only for a second, you're playing a role that was on TV for 50 years.
Yeah.
No pressure to try to read these parts.
Yeah, no pressure.
Right. Okay, so where did you want to go next? I'm sorry.
I was going to talk about little bits of the story that I found interesting. But like the Sam Cooke thing is what I was kind of talking about a little bit, which was the hint of doubt about like Malcolm kind of pointing out that Sam Cooke, like, you make all this fancy music, like, you know, the Copacabana, you bombed and all this stuff, but you're making all this kind of music designed for just, like, general audiences, but they don't have any weight to them because they're all just sort of nothing. And, like, you have Bob Dylan coming over here and, like, releasing a single that's just, like, that's his exact phrase, like, that's our music. Why aren't you doing our music? Why is this white guy doing our music?
To be fair, Bob Dylan has been anointed the greatest songwriter in history by multiple people.
Yeah, you know, I mean, hindsight being 2020, literally at that point in time when I was watching it, like, yeah, he's like, Bob Dylan got the Nobel Prize, gang.
Yes.
Like, yes. You know how hard that is to do?
Yeah, he's a tremendous moment in time. I thought the interesting thing too about, because I think it's interesting too, Sam Cooke was going through something that Sammy Davis Jr. also went through, the theories that he's catering to the white audience in order to be accepted. And Sam Cooke, on the other hand, had done something that Sammy was not able to my knowledge, was not able to do, which was he had begun his own publishing company, right? So he would own the rights to his music. So he was playing a much more strategic, he was playing checkers, you know, I mean, he was playing chess. And when he tells the story of selling Bobby Womack's song to the Rolling Stones in 1964, it's all over now. He talks about how, you know, Bobby did it. It was number 99. Up to these white boys out of London, it goes to number one. Now, if you remember, the Stones, early on, they don't do any music of their own. It's all blues R&B covers. So they're making, and the Stones have been beaten up throughout their whole career, and somewhat justly so, about stealing from the Mississippi Delta blues, the Chicago sounds, all these things, right? But the thing that Sam points out here is how much money that basically they were working for Sam. Even if Sam couldn't eat at the same table with him, they were putting money in Sam's pocket, hand over fist, by being number one in the world. That was when Bobby was okay with it. So, in Sam's mind, I have to put myself on a level they can't resist me in order to excel. Whereas Malcolm was like, they don't need to accept you. We need to push, right? And so there's your crux argument between the two.
Mm-hmm. Which really does culminate into some really great, just dialogue and back and forth.
The scene on the roof.
The scene on the roof is so good, where they just basically almost get into a fist fight.
Then and then, of course, and the guy who plays brother Kareem,
mm-hmm.
that Lance Riddick,
yeah.
He marches in there like he's gonna get between them because of course nobody's allowed to touch Malcolm, and then when Jim Brown strides in front of him and says, "Hey man, think long and hard right here," you know, Malcolm gets paid to be a tough. I mean, Kareem gets paid to be a tough guy, and he wasn't about to start that with Jim Brown.
Yeah, yeah, no. There are many things you can start with Jim Brown. I would not start that.
right. That's a problem you don't want. Okay.
There's again, everyone, I highly recommend you watch the movie because we're going to be talking about scenes just out of just random because, like, the movie itself feels... Well, I mean, there is a very good and cohesive story, but it feels just like a single event where just a lot of things happen in between, and you're just sort of kind of picking it up afterwards, like, oh yeah, I forgot, oh yeah, this happened as well. A really good scene as well, and I don't know why I'm focusing on Sam Cooke a lot, but I guess because Leslie Odom did so good. The Chain Gang scene, where you got to see the performance of Chain Gang, where they ripped out the mic similar to the Copa, where Malcolm first basically... first saw Sam in front of a crowd, and he just got everyone to do, like, the, like, if you heard Chain Gang, there's, like, the beat that happens at the beginning of it with the grunts, and he gets the whole crowd to start doing it as he, like, leads them to a song about Chain, about, you know, the Chain Gang.
Is that Otis Redding? Was Otis Redding the guy who played in front of him and sabotaged his equipment so there wouldn't be any sound? They leave him, and then he does stomp, stomp, clap till they... they're able to do Chain Gang?
I believe it is.
To remember. Be fair, too, the sound of the man working on the Chain Gang is, it's not Baby You Send Me.
It is not. It's a great song. I think it's my favorite Sam Cooke song, to be honest. So when I heard when I heard this, like, in the when the movie was going on, I was like, my friend's like, it's Chain Gang, and they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Shut up, I'm watching a movie. Which is like, okay. But, like, the way that it completely is what Malcolm, like, saw in him, like, that's what I want from you. That's what I want to see from you. And yet he's like, again, like you said, Sam's like, I'm working in the background making more money than these white boys will ever see because of all this stuff. So I don't see how I'm suffering from this.
Also controlling his content.
He is.
Which is something that hadn't happened before. Other people had no control over the content. You know? And so anybody could do their music because somebody else owned the publishing rights. Sam's deciding who sings Sam's song. You know, and that's an important thing as well. Also, it was important that Sam didn't even know Malcolm was at that show. Sam didn't know that he had seen that Malcolm had seen him five or six times. No idea. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting as well, because we get through the whole argument before that starts to come out.
Yeah. I did check, by the way. It is Jackie Wilson who did Sabotage.
I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. I had that wrong. I said Otis Redding. I apologize.
Yeah. It is indeed. Yes. We're good. It's okay. I messed up as well.
Jackie Wilson was a force of nature, too.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Bit of a jerk for what he did, but, you know, among other things, but, you know.
That's how that goes. It's show business, not show friends.
Mm-hmm. Well... is there any other scene you want to talk about before we...
I thought it was interesting. There was so much. So much. But I thought it was interesting as well, the scene where Malcolm winds up admitting that he's leaving, and Ali is furious with him. Mm-hmm. And you know, he thinks he's been used. And then when Malcolm says, hey, look, man, If you don't think you want to come with me, don't let that change what you're planning on doing tonight. You know, And I thought it was interesting to show that, of course, when a man is going to walk out in front of the world and put a bullseye on his back, he would have second thoughts and doubts. And then in the middle of all that, have even more second thoughts due to the fact that Malcolm was leaving the church. And then to walk out there and once he realized that Malcolm was coming from a legitimate place, walk out there and still do it in front of people.
Absolutely.
It's an interesting part as well.
I will definitely say, to double down on that, even though I've been talking about Leslie Odom, Sam Cooke for a bit because I thought he did a great job, the performance that really stole the show for me was Gory's Cassius Clay / Malcolm X. Muhammad Ali. My bad. I was talking about Malcolm, so I got confused.
And also the quick wrap up at the end after all the events have happened. And remember too, let me just go to that. I apologize. They do quickly tell you, you know, he does become Muhammad Ali, but Malcolm's not sitting in the room when that happens.
No, he's not.
He's not in the church when that happens.
He's not. The ending is, and also that all happens while Sam Cooke is singing, "Change is gonna, like, is the change gonna come?" On the Carson show, as this huge culmination.
I got goosebumps on my arms just when you said that, talking about the wrap up of that. And he's singing that, and then, you know, Malcolm's house is being burned down, and he's finishing the autobiography in a hotel, and he winds up getting, you know, murdered. And then you have Jim Brown, who
decides to be a movie star. He retires.
Exact opposite order. Well, what happens there is Paul Brown, he's shooting the Dirty Dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Brown says, "Come on back and be a camper. I'm going to fine you $1,500 a day." And after about, and Brown says, "You know what, man? You can just keep it. I'm done." And he, of course, Paul Brown didn't think that was possible, right? Mm-hmm. He would just quit football and go on to be in movies, but he did do that, and left the arena that had made him famous. And you know, nobody can question, like, he's not the guy that leaves and they go, "Well, maybe he wasn't tough enough to still do it." Well, he was still the toughest guy in the league. He was still the MVP. He walked away at the very top. So anyway, I think that the way they culminated and told us what the events were, because it kind of makes you think that maybe this isn't the exact conversation they had, but the events leading into and the events coming out of that night make it all seem possible, plausible.
It seems probable. Probable, the same basic thing. This whole thing about the movie is, like, it didn't happen, but it very well could have happened. And then the film, of course, ends, like, after Sam Cooke finishes the song, after we see all of these events happen, like, Malcolm's house burns to the ground, you see Jim Brown retiring, we see Muhammad Ali getting his name while Malcolm isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And just after he finishes singing it, there's silence. There's no applause. Just silence. And then just Malcolm just watches on the TV and just, like, there's not a smile on his face, not really anything, but just, like, a blank, like, if not, like, worried, if not content expression, I suppose. And then it just ends with the quote of, "It is a time for martyrs now, and if I am to be one, it will be the cause of brotherhood. That's the only thing that can save this country." Which is heck of a quote to end your movie on, let me tell you.
Yes, yes.
But it really hits you, and you can find the scene online, actually, because they dropped it online. You can check that scene out on its own, but you watch the movie. It's on Amazon Prime. If you have a subscription, you're good to go. I cannot recommend this movie enough. I know that sounds weird, being a knee jerk. I mean, like, "Oh, you like the movie? What's the price?" But, like, I will genuinely say that I believe this is going to be, I want to say it's probably going to be Best Picture winner. It's definitely going to be in the talk whenever we discuss Best Picture, if and when that ever happens at the Oscars. Because it deserves it. It's a movie that I think should be seen as a perfect encapsulation of not only that time period, but a little bit of the time period we are going through right now, at least in regards to the Black Lives Matter movement. where things are like this, like things feel like they're changing at such a snail's pace that how much change is really happening? It's a good conversation piece to have with that. And of course, absolutely, as we said, directed by Regina King, which fantastic.
Oh, a sidebar story to this, the way this ensemble winds up being put together, several of the first people that were notified about these parts and auditioning for them turned it down because they didn't want to have to audition for someone. And that's how she wound up with these guys, because she wouldn't call them back if they wouldn't audition.
You know what?
And I would say these guys hit home runs.
That's good. I like that. You know, Regina, go with, that's good. Like, I'm not doing no top bill name. If you ain't willing to put down the work and let me see what you're going to bring to the table, I ain't working with you.
Right?
That's a lot of respect. Right. I respect that.
Yeah, Teresa will research things while we're watching them. That was a little tidbit she threw at me over the course of the movie I thought was fascinating.
Ooh. Well, how
did she, being my wife, I'm sorry.
How did your wife like the movie?
She loved it. She loved it. I mean, I can't imagine somebody not loving it.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like a movie that's just, it's just a good time. I'm thinking about watching it again. I did just watch it again. I want to watch it again right now, as now that we're talking about it. That's just the way this movie is.
Right.
So yeah, I believe that's all we got for you today for our little knee-jerk reaction. We'll be back at you with another episode soon, hopefully.
Man. Thank you for doing this, Nick. Thank you. This was great.
Oh yeah. As soon as I saw this movie, I remember texting my teacher, like, you saw that, right? And she didn't. I'm like, why? Because she was my professor who does drama and does like the plays and stuff. And I was just thinking, and like, I immediately texted her, like, you need to, like, it's weird when you text a professor telling them to watch something, you know,
right. Where
you go right out of your way to go talk to someone who is informing you of things, where you're like, okay, but you more than anyone else need to see this. Not for any, like, negative reason, but just thinking, like, you would fall in love with it.
Just as a person, right? That's always a neat aspect of your life when something finally happens that you can recommend to people.
Like, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you know,
like, what I mean? Right?
When you're
the old sage. I am.
Yes.
To borrow from Cobra Kai, I am the sensei. I am Danny Lawrence. Me. Right. All right. So once again, from our team over here at Is It a Real Classic? It has been me, Litnik, as well as Cobra Kai KP.
Strike first.
Sweep the leg.
Oh, strike first being the thought of the day, because Ali was one of the first people that went with a straight right instead of a jab as the lead punch. You have to be extremely fast to be able to do that, because obviously if you're right-handed, your left is closer. So that was the strike first motivation, in case you were wondering.
Well,
the technical thing in that.
You know,
the pugilist out there, the pugilism.
You gave a reason for it. I respect it. You caught me off guard with the reasoning, and it's a very good reasoning, and I apologize. That's on me. I'll just wax on and wax off my way out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. This has been a Go Home Heat production 2021. Once again, telling you to go out there and find some good content. You'll never know when you'll find, or if you'll find, the next classic. And cut.